arrive here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Eryu.
We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. There's so much TV out there, so we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guest will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows. And they're going to be choosing from the three genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and all things unscripted. And if you want to know our all-time picks and where they fall on our personal BFF criteria, then subscribe and stay tuned because that episode's coming up soon.
That's right. And now let's get to our guest this week and find out what's in their top six. I'm really excited to have this guest with us today. She's an executive producer in both scripted and unscripted TV. She's the co-creator of the iconic series Being Bobby Brown. She's also my first mentor in the world of unscripted TV development. Please welcome Tracy Baker Simmons.
Woo!
Tracy, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so nervous and excited.
don't be nervous. Is this your first podcast?
Yeah.
Actually, get out of here.
I mean, I think I did a podcast today, but
today.
Well, that's the thing. You're no stranger to interviews. You know what I mean? It's just a different form.
No, not at all. I think it's because it's you, because I want to make you proud.
Oh, Tracy, stop it. Stop it. I'll tell you what, though, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. I mean, I mentioned you're my first mentor. So listeners know Brandi and I both work in unscripted development. And Tracy was the person who hired me at the first production company I worked for in development at a company called Jarrett Creative, which is great. And I ended up being there for, 5 years, kind of working my way up under Tracy's wing. And Tracy, I mean, you taught me so much. You taught me how to work with talent, work with executives, work with other producers and creative types, and, how to develop ideas. It's really formative. So, because I wouldn't be here without you.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love you guys' origin story.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Dan, I saw he's super, super smart. Had great instincts, and I needed our department was small.
Yeah.
And I knew I needed someone who was going to fill in the gaps. And, he was just really about the business of television. And I love that. I love a person who's a forever student, and, he earned his stripes and I moved on. And I think he ultimately.
Yeah, no, I stayed on after you had moved on. But for those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about kind of your professional TV history. We mentioned Bobby Brown, and, I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the podcast, but what else have you been involved in? Kind of how did you get to where you are now?
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, from the television side of my world, I started in entertainment in the music industry, and then I produced music videos and commercials. But from the television side, I basically, came up with the idea of doing Being Bobby Brown, and that segued me into the space. So I always like to, say this without trying not to brag, but I'm I've only ever been a producer. Okay, that's sorry.
That is the best subtle flex ever. Just me in the business, I've just always produced, to be honest. Yeah. Oh, like my only been that. It's no, I just produce.
Yeah. Your first pitch just turns into an iconic show in the genre, no big deal. Brandi and I over here working away
I know. It's how many pitches have I done in the past 2 weeks?
Oh God, I know. Well, then I go backwards, right? I make this iconic show, and then I'm pitching, and I'm like, "Wait, you don't want to buy this? Come on, you buy what I have. You take what I have and buy."
That's right.
So, but yeah, so I started there, and then from there, just honestly, got to work with Drew Hill, and then did Sprite Step Off, which was the brainchild of Rob Hardy and Will Packer. Came from their movie Stomp the Yard. They were like, "We have this idea. Here, take it, make it a show." And Sprite was like, "Yeah, we'll run the competition. You pick the talent." And from there, continuing to develop things, took a hiatus from having to be on the front line and went and ran, you know, the development department for the Jarretts and did some pretty amazing, cool stuff there, like Boston's Finest and Alaska Women Looking for Love. And
over your shoulder, like the Houstons too, you know, looking at the poster behind you, the Houstons on our own. That was, so when I started, that's, we were in the throes of those shows. It was Boston's Finest, a lot of back and forth working with the police force there and specific units there. And you were going to Atlanta all the time to work with the Houstons in that show. And that was shortly after Whitney passed. It was a, and I still look back at those days and I'm like, man, that's how a producer just hustles. Like, you were all over the place holding everything together. And I look back on that as like something that I strive to, when I have a lot of things going on, a lot of shows going on, a lot of talent to juggle. And, you know, that was a crazy time.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've continued to move forward. I did a biopic on Bobby Christina. I have some other biopics in development. I'm doing a Christmas movie with Hallmark.
That's cool.
I love it.
I just like making TV.
Hell yeah.
You know, and I actually got to serve on a committee for Obama. So I sort of do a lot of stuff. I like storytelling. I like being politically involved. And I'm just like one of those people who, you know, someday want to run a major studio. So I'm just making sure I understand everything. So when that day comes, I'm ready.
I mean, it sounds like you're on your way.
Yeah, I have no doubt like, that you will.
Basically there.
Basically, I'm trying.
Yeah. So Tracy, you clearly love making TV and making content, but we're here to talk about watching content. Do you watch a lot of TV as well?
So interestingly enough, growing up, I grew up in a very religious household and didn't get to watch a lot of TV, believe it or not. But I watched Fat Albert because I was done cleaning up at about 12, so I could do that. and then honestly, it was like me really finding myself in the entertainment space was when I really started being like, oh, this is TV. Oh my God.
And consuming more
what are
stuff.
These people doing and saying? And then probably the interesting thing when I did Being Bobby Brown, I remember, well, first of all, I shot the whole show Verite. And I remember when we were editing it, the network executives, and they were all swarming around the post and everything. They were just like, she's not getting it. She's not getting it. And I felt like they were just like, that's it. You're going to the principal's office, which meant go have lunch with Lauren Zalesnick, who was the president of the network, because I wouldn't listen to the executives. Right. And the first thing she said to me was like, so do you watch TV? And I was like, yes. And she said, well, what do you watch? And I said, The Wire. And she said, herein lies the problem. So I was like, yeah, like, I didn't know you're supposed to watch bad TV. I thought you're supposed to watch good TV if you're going to watch TV. And I don't know what else you want me to watch, lady. But from there, I actually left that lunch and said, well, I'm still not changing my show and there won't be interviews, but I will watch other television.
Right.
And from there, I made a commitment to watch everything. And I know, and Dan, I know when you worked with me, I used to say that all the time. I watch everything.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I want to be able to talk about it. I want to be able to understand what I like about it, or at least understand why they are doing it. And I don't want to show up at lunch with some executive looking down at me and asking me what I watch. And then when I tell her I'm watching The Wire, she's looking at me like I'm crazy because I'm not making The Wire.
Right.
So I watch it all. Now there's so much, but overall, I'm skimming. I'm seeing what's popular. I'm on Twitter or wherever to see what everybody's talking about. And I'm checking it out to see like what the market bears, you know? Look, this is a business too, you know?
I think that's something I picked up from you as well. You know, in college and, you know, in my first couple of years in the industry, I watched a lot of stuff, but it was all stuff that I wanted to watch. And I think I picked up from you, you got to watch the things that you might not like, but other people are watching and figure out why and what's working about them. Because you're right, we're in a business and that's what helps us develop stuff.
Yep. But then I still have stuff that I love that I'm watching and I'm making it my business to watch and, you know, savoring like Ray Donovan.
Well, speaking of, let's talk about some almost shows.
Okay. So before we get to your BFF criteria, we want to know a little bit about your personal TV history. So let's start out with you revealing to us the shows that almost made your list. So these are the shows that didn't make your top six, but they only just missed the cut. So they're not like your TV BFFs, but like they're your TV, like pretty good friends.
Almost. Ray Donovan was on that list. So Ray Donovan, like, so deliciously flawed in every way. And
but the show, or the character?
The character.
Okay.
And the show was just like everything horrible. And it's just like, but I love him. And I love these people because they're crazy. And then I met Donnie Wahlberg and I was like, I think this might be a little bit about your family.
Oh, that's funny. I hadn't heard that before, but that's good.
So that one is just like, that was must see for me. And, you know, it didn't make the list because other things had to make the list.
Sure.
And I think I have that Snowfall because Snowfall is actually kind of simple and linear.
Okay.
But the character is complex.
What is Snowfall about? Because I know I've seen the previews for it, but I've never actually seen the show. So like kind of what?
Yeah.
I know it's on FX.
Yeah.
If mm-hmm. people are looking for it.
So it's the crack epidemic, how okay. crack got into the hood, basically. Okay. And it's sort of loosely based on a guy named Free Ray Ricky.
Okay.
Like, so a real person. It's a lot of his sort of story or something mm-hmm. similar to his okay. story. So it's about the government allowing the drugs into the community to get the money to buy guns to support a war in Nicaragua or somewhere. So it's very interesting mm-hmm. and complicated from those perspectives. Mm-hmm. But Franklin, who is Three Way Ricky, mm-hmm. is an amazing actor. Just like I met him at an Emmy event. And I was just like, you get all my votes. Like, oh my God, because you're just so good. And I don't want anything to happen to you. And when he was about to go to jail, I was like, no, he can't go to jail. I know he's a criminal, but he can't go to jail. So that is on my almost list, but honestly, probably because it's a new show. Mm-hmm. And it's only had, I think this is like the third season.
Mm. Okay.
So that's why.
And it's ongoing. All right. So check that out if you haven't already. That sounds good. I've heard of it. Mm-hmm. One of my bosses loves it, raves about it. And I haven't mm-hmm. checked it out yet, but add it to the list, the never ending mm-hmm. yeah. list. It's on there now.
It is. It's so good. Yeah. So let's talk about it in treatment. So in treatment, it's like, it should have almost been on the list because
it was close.
Honestly, I want to say what I loved about that show is it normalized therapy for me.
Mm. Oh, that's awesome.
It really was like people go to therapy and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and live a regular life and they're just out here living and nobody knows that they over here with all these damn problems. So this could work for you, Tracy. And it really, honestly, it made me feel comfortable with therapy. And I love that show for that. And I just couldn't stop watching it because I was happy to hear other people's problems and then found me some good therapists and got to start figuring out mine. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, it changed me.
Wow. So where would it have been in your criteria? Best favorite or forever?
Not forever, because I don't want to hear people's problems forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Good call.
But maybe favorite, but okay. not forever.
Yeah,
that sounds right. I love that personal connection to it. And
yeah.
I think that's hopefully probably what the creators were aspiring to. Like, hey, let's normalize this for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
You know what you should check out, Tracy, if you haven't already? Have you seen on Showtime a show called Couples Therapy?
No.
I've seen some clips. I'll admit I haven't seen a full episode, but it feels like the reality version of In Treatment, but specifically with couples. It's like a very fly on the wall. These are just people in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
With their significant other just kind of going through it. I think you would, you might dig that.
Yeah, I think I will. I mean, we're already in couples therapy, not to tell my business, but to tell my business. Not because we're crazy or fighting, but I actually tell people my husband's a little passive aggressive and it's the things he ain't saying that I need to know what he's trying to say. So I got a therapist to help us out.
It's about maintenance, you know, and you don't need to be going through it to get right. a lot of good stuff out of therapy. So
exactly.
Great. Wow. So that was close. What else was close?
So I would say Lovecraft, definitely.
Lovecraft Country.
Again, it just doesn't have, it only has the one season. So I didn't want
right.
to give mm-hmm. it the favorite and it didn't live up later, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
But it was amazing. Like, it would be best. It could be, it could go on the best. It needs two more great seasons to be best.
Sure.
But it's running for best. Definitely.
Okay.
Just the cinematography, the storytelling, the acting.
Were you scared? Because I was very scared in a few episodes. Mm. I was like the one episode with the two little
the little girls.
Mm. Like,
yeah. Well, I had watched True Blood, so I guess. And my first husband was from New Orleans, honey. So, you know. I'm not that scared of voodoo. But you know what else I didn't mention that I love was Underground.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Now, they need to bring that back. That show was so good. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you what was good about that show. Because a lot of times when they tell the story of slaves, it's interesting from, like, it's almost voyeuristic, sort of observed slavery. Mm-hmm. Or they can only see it from the perspective of, oh, well, these people did this to these people.
Mm-hmm.
But Underground, which was about the Macon Six, it really, like, allowed the slaves and the people who escaped slavery to tell their story. And it was okay. just like, you could root for them because you also saw like, okay, there wasn't some little stupid people. They were like in a foreign country and dealing with, but they also did take certain power in their own hand. And when the mother killed the master that was in love with her and she hung him because of what he did to their son, which was his child, it was funny because he was like, you're going to go to hell for this. And she goes, but you going first. And it was like, wow, like you just got to see. I mean, I think that they did when they redid Roots. They did that too. So hats off to Will Packer for that because they really decided to tell it from the slave's POV. And, you know, you then understood why Kuta Kinte did not want to give up his name. Mm-hmm. And that we hadn't seen that. And we didn't see that in television when we were growing up. So I want to like say hats off to those two shows because they changed the narrative for mm-hmm. those people. And it was inspiring. Like I saw this group of kids in Brooklyn who watched Roots for the very first time, the reboot. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we didn't know. Like they were in tears, but it also changed them because it wasn't from a perspective of, look at you, you come from slavery. But it was really like, those people were badass, mm-hmm. you know, and they had something to say and they were trying to stand their ground against all odds. So I really like it when creatives like take a position and really like tell a story that honors or humanizes people.
I worked on the early development of the Roots reboot.
You did?
It was, I was working on that before. So I was at the History Channel for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in, when we started a scripted department, I was like, I want to be in this. And they were like, we don't really have one. I was like, let's make one.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And so I was involved in like the very, very early stages before Will Packer came on board. But I did, when that first script came in,
mm-hmm.
I was floored. And I remember going to the EVP's office and being like, oh my God, did you, like, I was crying.
Yeah, that was so good. And so, yeah. Like, honestly, that was like, it could go on my best list, you know,
because wow,
I
sure.
grew up watching, I saw Roots, which was a major TV event, right? Mm-hmm. Alex Haley and the whole thing. And then this thing happened. And it's kind of interesting because at first I didn't want to watch it because I was like, oh, they want to show us their story again. Mm-hmm. All right, whatever. And then I just like, maybe like a week or so later, I was like, let me just see what it is. Once again, Coastal Watch everything.
Right.
Don't be stupid. And I was like, wait a minute. This is dope. This is so good. Like, this is growth. This is how they originally told it. But here's the other person's POV. Hmm. And I loved it. I really, really love it. Like, honestly, it should be on my best list. Sorry, Game of Thrones.
All right. Well, speaking of that best list, Tracy, let's get into your TV BFF criteria, right? So okay. To recap for those listening, so we asked you to pick 6 shows in total with 2 shows in each of the 3 categories. Those categories are best, favorite, and forever, the BFF. So your best shows are the ones that you think are the most artistic or well-executed, just kind of overall the best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart or mean something to you personally. And the best way to describe the forever category is if you die tomorrow and in the afterlife, you get to choose 2 shows to watch in order from pilot to finale, no skipping around, straight through. What are those shows?
Mm-hmm. For each category, we had you choose from the 3 overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted. And unscripted is everything from reality shows to game shows to documentary series, travelogues. But the only thing is that there must be multiple episodes, so there's no one-offs allowed. But other than that, it can be anything. And guess what? There is no such thing as a guilty pleasure here. We are respectful of all TV, all choices. If you like it, you want to watch it, guess what? Do it. And the only other rule is that you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you pick a comedy in your best category, the other pick has to be unscripted or drama. All right, so let's get into it. What are your best shows, Tracy? What's number one?
So the first one I picked was Game of Thrones.
You mentioned, all right.
Because my husband loves it. No, honestly, because it was like a damn super movie every week, right?
Yeah.
The landscape, the costume, the set design, all those things. And it's the one show, like, honestly, I could say I didn't really watch that show, but it was in my living room, in my ears. And then I would go watch scenes on YouTube because I'm like, what was that scene that was in there that I didn't watch, but that I want to watch? And then I needed a minute to watch any of them because it was so violent and they were killing off the main characters, like, yeah. Too bad, you're dead. And you're like, wait, that's not how TV works. You can't kill the hero. Well, they're gone.
It's almost like the executives pulled them in and said, have you seen TV? What are you doing? You
know? Yes, exactly.
What are you watching? Or
yeah, you know, he's listed first,
like, right?
Yeah, exactly. So people were just dying off and it didn't even matter. And it was just like they're blowing up, look like countries, basically, and dragons. And I mean, they had everything in that thing. I'm like, Jesus Christ, how much is this an episode, huh?
By the end, it was huge. I mean, so hugely expensive. So this is interesting, amazing. Tracy. I want to ask, so it sounds like whether it was inadvertent or not, you almost kind of experienced the show like twice as you're watching. Cause right, you would watch with your husband and it's on and maybe you're not paying the closest attention, the violence, but then you'd also then go back and rewatch scenes after the fact. So you kind of like double watched it. So like, what were some of those scenes that like stick out when you think of that experience of how you watched Game of Thrones? What were some moments, without getting too spoilery, but what were some moments that stick out to you?
So I've got my husband with some of those characters were, but the girl with the dragon.
Yeah, Daenerys. Like,
Daenerys, okay. And then the little girl who killed everybody.
Arya. Right?
Yeah, she was my favorite. She was. Because that little thing, she was...
She's great.
Because I like a badass, you know? And she was badass,
yes,
right?
Yes, she was.
She was dope.
So, but it's funny, it's still made your list, which I think speaks to just the high level of production value and just how well the show was produced. And I mean, you've made tons of stuff. Speak to that a little bit, because it sounds like you may have not even seen all of the show really front to back, but you still recognized how well it was done. And that's why it's on your list.
Yeah, I mean, look, it looked amazing. You couldn't take your eyes off of a scene when you were watching it. The costumes were amazing. The acting, everybody was great, you know? I mean, it was almost like if you wasn't great, you couldn't be on the show.
Yeah, and a lot of unknowns, too, that we kind of were introduced to.
Yeah, but they were great actors, you know? And what was always interesting, too, is that my husband was never disappointed except for the finale.
Well, that's a story for another day that a lot of people have. Yeah.
But it was just like people were never disappointed, and that's hard to do. And season after season, and no one wanted it to end, and it was just like so good. And they did all the things that you're not supposed to do, and still kept their audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a good point too. Like talking about the finale real quick. And if, you know, if you haven't listened already, go back to the very first episode of this podcast. Brandy and I talk about our almost shows, and Game of Thrones is one of mine. And we talked about the finale a little bit and how it ended, but I think you're right. The reason that people were maybe disappointed by it is because they already cared so much about it, right? You can't be that disappointed if you don't care that much about the thing in the first place. And I think that's, even though it may have disappointed some fans at the very end, it's still a testament to how good that show was and what it was able to do to get you to that point in the first place where you could feel that after the finale aired, you know?
Yeah.
They never let you down until the finale. It's like they all, I feel like the show always exceeded expectations. Mm-hmm. And another thing that as you were talking made me think of that I hadn't really given the show credit for is how many unknown people they cast and who I now only know. I will never know Cersei Lannister as anyone but Cersei Lannister. Like those, that's even when they're in other things. And it's like Arya is Arya forever. Like she's lucky she was a little girl. So like it will be a little bit more difficult to imagine her as she grows up more. But like that's just who everyone is.
Yeah.
Wow. Great pick. Tracy, we're off to a strong start. That's hard to
wish I was those producers.
Although based on some of the vitriol they got at the end, do you really? Yeah, you still do. Yeah, you still do.
A little hit at the end ain't hurting all that. That's right. All that love.
So Tracy, what's your next pick in your best category? It's either going to be a comedy or an unscripted show here.
The circus.
Oh man, I'm so happy about this pick. Okay, so real quick, if you don't know The Circus, this is a reality show on Showtime. Basically, talk about Herculean efforts to produce a show. This is a basically real-time political docuseries following like the major players in American politics. It's filmed like Sunday through Friday and then premieres 2 days later on Sunday again. And it's crazy. Anyway, Tracy, talk to us about The Circus and why it's in your best.
I mean, honestly, you said it. It is real political docu, you know, follow doc. Pretty verite, started for the campaign 2016. Honestly, I think the intent was to do this through, you know, until the presidency and everyone thinking honest, but I will be honest, because I watched it diligently. They were the first ones that predicted Trump to win. And they were the ones that made us aware of the headlines in middle America, where Trump was on the front page, and they were like, something's happening that people aren't paying attention to. And it was just like that level of television. This was television. This was not the news. This was television.
That's right.
Yeah.
That just like, I aspire to produce something on that level as a producer in the non-scripted space. And it just and then unfortunately or whatever for them, it just kept going, you know,
that's right.
The pandemic. I mean, it was like,
because they wouldn't go straight through like every week because that's just, I mean, that would be too much. I mean, you'd run people into the ground and they get so burned out. But I think they would go on like, you know, 8-10 week stretches, and they'd always choose their timing really well. So it was. Leading up to the midterms or around like very interesting policy decisions and things like that. So they were always there when you wanted them to be there, which I think was a really smart. They were just from top to bottom. It's very smartly produced and they're very on top of it. Brandy, are you a circus?
We don't have Showtime anymore. So, and by anymore, I mean like we had it right when The Circus premiered. And I think I saw like the first episode and then we didn't have any more because like we were getting it for free. And, but I feel like I would definitely really, really like to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so good.
Because I feel like I needed to take a break. Like I didn't get back into it because I just wasn't ready to like face reality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like how much I wanted to like live in that.
And you know, they had tried before in the past, HBO had tried to do a political reality non-scripted thing called K Street.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I think I've heard of this. That's right.
Yeah, but that didn't go. That didn't work. But The Circus, they hit the lick. And it was true. It was The Circus is the greatest damn show on earth. Like, are you kidding
me? Yes.
Yeah. It's it's like you're dizzy, like what just happened? And then it's like on and on and on, drink bleach, do this, you know, it's just like it's just like nonstop content. Why not, you know?
But now, Tracy, so I gotta imagine it's gonna come back, but it's gonna, so the last stretch kind of concluded with election, post-election,
the
stop
big
the
lie.
Steal, the big lie, the insurrection, and then inauguration. And that's kind of where it left off. So how do you think it's going to have to shift? Because, I mean, there's still a lot of the insidious, terrible things that are happening on all levels, but you don't have the Trump at the center of it anymore, which the show has always had. It's always had Trump to talk about in some respect. Do you think it'll lag? Do you think it'll still remain its relevance?
Well, the nutsos are still out there, right? And the big lie keeps going. And, you know, I would love for to see, I would love it if they told the story, the reaction story, because you think about the different laws that are being passed in these states now, these different election laws, and what one state passed a law where you can actually drive through a crowd and kill somebody and pretend you didn't mean to, and you don't get to get, you know, sentence for that.
It was a riot. I was fearing for my life in a riot. So I ran through five people.
The crowd. Yeah. And, you know, next year is a big midterm, you know, like, will the Democrats hold on to the House and the Senate? So basically there's still content out there and it is still a shit show because that Marjorie lady and Josh Hawley and Gates.
Well, and these these terrible senators, I think you're right. There's going to be a lot of, you know, you don't love to see it as Americans, but as producers, I guess they're going to have things because, you know, you're seeing a lot of bills get stopped that have been passed in the House, HR1, you know, most important among them, I think, that, you know, have met Mitch McConnell and are dead on the Senate floor. And it's going to take changing the filibuster. Yeah. And that's going to be something that they'll follow, I assume. And that's going to be a big thing. And, you know, as judicial things come up, you know, if people retire it, you know, and then I think you're right, it'll lead into the midterms and then we're kind of freaking right back into it again. And then around the corner is another goddamn presidential election. It doesn't end.
And another election. And it's, you know, and look, you know, they're going to pick up on that because is Trump really going to run again? And what does that look like?
Some bullshit. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So the circus just doesn't stop, unfortunately.
It doesn't stop. But circle back around to what you said. This is one of those shows where I wish I had, not even creative, because I think you really need like just a huge level of access and probably ins in political journalism to like create this sort of thing.
But
I'm jealous of it every time I watch. I'm like, man, what it would be like to work on that sort of show. I'm not jealous of the post producers because that's got to be some crazy hours. But man.
Yeah.
I say, like, do they just run it 24 hours?
I'm sure they do. They must have.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you just like, that's one of those shows like you're like, okay, especially, you know, a person like myself, it's like, okay, I want to make one of those one day, you know, whether it's, you know, just looking at the next sector of leaders that are coming out of this movement with Black Lives Matter and, you know, the George Floyd and everything else. But like, what does that look like? And, you know, who is our next, you know, Martin Luther King or Malcolm X? And how do we sort of like honestly see, watch that unfold? And keep the people safe or what have you. But or honestly, just, you know, following Stacey Abrams or the NAACP, it's documenting history. It's documenting history. And that's important, too.
Like, and just think about if you could embed with like whoever our Fred Hampton is today.
Yeah.
Like if you could, like, he's got TikTok. Like, he's on social media.
The
like,
people are out there.
You're exactly. out there. Yeah.
No, it's true. And I mean, and that's what the circus basically has opened the door for. So that makes me excited about, you know, and I'm grateful to the circus because, like I said, K Street didn't work. So I know that the circus was a hard pitch, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you know how these networks are.
Speaking of hard pitches, so let's move on to the favorite category. So a little behind the curtain, we got tipped off to one of the shows that'll be discussed here, which makes perfect sense. We mentioned it a little bit before. So Tracy, I think it's time. What is your first pick in the favorite category?
Being Bobby Brown.
Oh,
being Bobby Brown. I mean, I'm sorry. I like my work.
Don't be sorry.
You know what? It's funny. Brandy and I, we discussed because we knew we always wanted to have like, you know, producer friends and people that we've worked with on the podcast. And we discussed the rule of, should we allow folks to pick shows that they've worked on? And we've gone back and forth about it, but I think in this instance, you can't, we have to allow it. We can't now. Yeah, we got to talk about being Bobby Brown.
You have to.
We got to talk about Whitney, right?
Yeah. You got to talk about it all. So tell us about the shows. If somehow people don't know about being Bobby Brown, what is it and how did it come to be?
So if you happen to live, like, I don't know, in an igloo or something, and you just not, no, I'm joking. Honestly, like, I was living in Atlanta, watching them on the news, and there was this, like, all these clues, you know? It's funny, you wake up in the morning, you go, Lord, order my steps. And mine just kept running into Bobby and Whitney. And I said, well, Lord, do you want them to be on TV? No. So honestly, it really was like, you know, mentioning it to my partner, Wanda, like, maybe we could do a show with them. And
to back up, so Tracy, Wanda, Shelly, your producing partner, who you've made lots of unscripted shows with at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then, so we said, let's play a game of 6 degrees of separation and see if we can meet Bobby Brown. And honestly, we were only 3 degrees away. And that's my new thing too. If you're Black in the industry, you're really only 3 degrees away. You're not six. Okay. Mm-hmm. The world's a little smaller for us.
That's true.
And so, well, first we met a spiritual advisor. Imagine they, somebody claimed that title.
And then, I'd like to see the lower third.
Yeah. Well, we didn't end up not getting him on the show because he really wasn't doing what he's supposed to be doing. But the pitch to him was, hey, we could put you on the show too.
Right.
And then
it always is.
It's all you got to start somewhere. Yeah. And so he introduced us to his brother, to Bobby's brother, who actually, when I saw him, was like, oh, we know each other. We have a mutual friend. I saw you at a barbecue in the park in California. And so then the brother introduced me to Bobby, but not without resistance though.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And he was like, what? TV reality show? And at that time, there were like, I don't even know, Nick and Jessica hadn't started yet. It was the Osbournes and Real World.
Right.
Early days.
Yeah, that's the frame of reference, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
And so basically, the brother was just like, my brother is just harmless. And, you know, he doesn't mean any harm. Like, it's so weird. Like, and what do you mean put cameras in their house? And I was like, look, if he just wants to show people that he's not crazy and he doesn't have Whitney Houston tied up somewhere pumping pills down her throat, he might want to let us make a TV show. And he said that's a good idea.
What a fucking pitch. Tracy, goddamn it. I love it.
I mean, I was trying to say, look at here. Pull back the curtain, baby.
Right.
We're going to help you.
We're going to help you. This is good for everybody. And it was funny because Bobby was like, reality. Oh, and I remember Bobby on the phone with Whitney. He goes, these girls want to make a reality show. And she goes, what? Reality? What are you talking about? And then he was in jail and out of jail and then went back to jail. And then I was just like, oh, this is not happening. You're going back to jail. And he was like, no, I'm getting out of jail tomorrow. And then he literally was like, if you want to make a show with me, bring the camera right now to Boston. And I literally bet the house. Literally, I had raised $500,000 for my company. I was supposed to be developing shows. Uh-huh. And I had called my investor and I was like, I want to bet the house on Bobby Brown. And the investor was like, have you lost your mind? And I was like, no, I'm telling you. He goes, okay, do you? And I literally was like, Bobby, you have to sign this paper. Where's your lawyer? And he was like, my lawyer is right here. Great. I'm going to fax it. That's how long ago this was. It was a fax machine in a hotel room. Right. You know, a damn 2-page deal memo. That's all we had.
Wow.
And Wanda had never produced a piece of TV in her life. And I was like, call this guy, this camera guy. He's my friend. He'll go with you. Sent 2 camera guys and a sound guy and booked flights that day and put them on the plane. And Wanda was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, no, listen to me. Be nice to him. Be about the business and let the camera guy and the sound guys do their thing. And she goes, what are we shooting? I was like, whatever he does, just capture it. And she went and she goes, do you know that you sent me to Boston to be with Bobby Brown, a person we don't even know? And I was like, it's fine. You'll be fine. I got to stay here and figure out how to make a TV show because I've never made a TV show before. And she was like, I'm here. I met him. He's actually kind of nice. So I called the lawyers and was just like, okay, we're filming with him. He's going to be there for a few days and then he's going to come back to Atlanta. He flies back to Atlanta and all my senses said, oh yeah, when I was bumping into people telling me all these stories about him, he likes to stay at the Hyatt. They like to stay at the penthouse. So, and I knew I need to capture him. Like I need to hold on to him before he got to Whitney. So,
wow, interesting.
I put him in the penthouse and then said, here's my pitch. I want to call the show Being Bobby Brown because I had watched the movie Being John Malkovich.
Oh, I love that.
Yes, the layers of the person.
Yeah.
And Bobby was like, that sound dope. My label used to be called Triple B. That's Triple B's. I was like, great.
Kismet.
this is meant to be. And the pitch really was like, look, it's all about being you. A dad, a husband, a brother, a son, an uncle. Great. So all I need is a piece of all those things. So as far as your wife's concerned, I just need a little piece of her. And he was like, all right, cool. Let me call her. So he calls her. She's like, "You, where are you?" And he's like, I'm at the hotel with my producer. Yes, I'm your producer.
Check. Step one, check.
And she's like, your producer for what? And he goes, I'm making a reality show. She goes, you don't know what the hell you're doing. And he goes, just come meet me at the hotel. You know our spot. So she's like, cool, I'll find my way. And she zooms down there, you know, in her Porsche. And we're there. And, you know, the people called from downstairs. Mrs. Houston's on her way up. And she gets out the elevator. And we're standing there in the hallway because we're like, okay, she's coming. We're going to have to let her in the room with her husband. We pull the cameras out. And she steps out the elevator and she goes, hi, I'm Whitney. I'm like, no, you Whitney Houston, lady.
I don't know if I can do first names.
I'm like, yes, ma'am. And then she said, y'all his producers? And we were like, yes, ma'am. And then she said, well, I'm about to go out here and see my husband. Bring your little cameras. Go, camera, go.
Get a mic near that woman, quick.
And honestly, then we were like, how does this work? She's like, what, you make a show with my husband? What y'all gonna do? We're like, whatever he does. And then she goes, well, he do what he do with me. So we're like, what does that mean? She's like, I guess I'm making a show with y'all. And then we're like, can you sign this paper? And then the rest is the history of an amazing show.
We gotta live with SARS. We gotta live with what's the anthrax.
Oh, you just watch too much TV. I'm a true American. I've been to jail before. That's American.
Kiss my ass.
All right, that's what I need.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh my, I don't think I've ever heard that origin story of being Bobby Brown until right now. Oh my gosh, that's an
amazing story.
This is so cool.
Yeah,
especially because it was like, I feel like the early 2000s, it was the Wild West and unscripted, and like you guys really, you like carved out a spot. Like,
yeah,
well, because that's the thing. I mean, you guys were the first, and I might be wrong, but the show was on Bravo. This was pre Housewives, so was this the first? This is the first docu-reality, like the first docu-follow on Bravo. That opens the door to everything that they do now. That's their whole their whole jam.
They didn't even know Atlanta existed as a city almost. They were like, why is Whitney and Bobby in Atlanta? You know, and it's like, yeah, they're in Atlanta.
Little did they know.
Exactly.
How integral Atlanta would become.
Yeah, but you know what? We own the show, so... Love you, Bravo. Let us know if you want to license some footage one day.
Wow. And that's cool that you own the show as well. Because that doesn't happen very much anymore either. Just looking at, you know, what things were like when you produced that and how new to the landscape reality TV was, but you were new to the business and just, it was all just like Brandy said, kind of the Wild West. So I love that.
Yeah.
Gosh, what a great story. Your very first fucking TV pitch is being Bobby Brown. I still can't get over it. That's why.
Yes.
Brandy, so you watched the show when it was on or?
I did watch the show when it was on. Oh, nice. And I really enjoyed it.
Good.
Because I mean, I grew up with both Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston, you know? Well, number one, I've just always loved Whitney Houston. I feel like she played an integral part in my life as a growing
up. The but, soundtrack of your life, right?
Yeah, like, it's just like, how I can sing The Bodyguard by, I can just start singing it right now, starting at track one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I also, I feel like being Bobby Brown was one of the first reality shows that I really started watching. Because I feel like it also came out the same year that I started working in reality TV.
Oh, nice.
But I do, we used to get Bravo because we didn't have cable, but we did, we were able to plug in the cable wire into the back of my 19-inch RCA. And we got like five channels when we did that, and one of them was Bravo. And so I watched a lot of Being Bobby Brown. I started watching, because I think the first Housewives premiered maybe the year after Being Bobby Brown was when OC came on.
Yeah.
And so like I pretty much like, anything that was on Bravo from like 2004 to 2007, like I watched. And I watched all of it because that was also back before, you know, you could just stream everything and TV was kind of like appointment viewing. But like, I would love to know just like, I mean, it feels like every moment of doing this show must have been like super memorable. But like, are there some, or is there an episode or a storyline or is there something that like, it just brings back all the feels for you of like what that, of like, of that whole experience?
Yeah. I mean, look, when you make a docu-soap, you almost, as a producer, especially if you're, you know, you're the showrunner, which I didn't even know what I was called, but that's what it was. You're living with the talent, basically, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, and like they were used to living their lives carefree. And at that time, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. There was no one teaching me how to make a show. And so I was just like, look, we have to follow you. And then one day we're at Dave and Buster's, because that was the family thing they were doing. And Whitney goes, yo, yo, hey, come here. We're going to the Bahamas tomorrow. I'm like, well, who's we? We, my family. We didn't book flights. We're flying on my private jet. I'm like, but we have a crew. It doesn't work like that. I think they might need passports. We don't even know if these people have passports. So it was like, okay, slow down, please. We're making a show. But that was like probably like a week or so in. And then I was like, oh, I need your schedule. You guys are just free willing around here. You can go wherever you please, whenever you want to. I can't do that. So that helped me actually realize like, okay, you at least get a schedule. And honestly, then they became so familiar. They were like family.
Wow. I feel like we could continue talking about Being Bobby Brown for like another hour, but we must continue with the criteria. The show demands it. But wow, this is so great. So Tracy, what's your second favorite show?
Entourage.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
I like it.
So, speaking of celebrities and the people around them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Celebrities and talent management.
Right. Yeah, that's my life, right?
Yeah.
How could I not love that show? I mean, I was a big, you know, Marky Mark fan. And, you know, just like, just everything about that was like, if I made a show about the world I saw or the world I participated in, it would be that story. So every piece of it, it was like, I knew what that looked like, you know? And then that show came and it was during the time when I had worked for the Dungeon family. And the Dungeon family is Organized Noise, the guys who created Outkast and Goody Mob. So
I did not know
that.
Yeah.
And I worked in the dungeon.
Wow.
Let's be clear. They didn't let me go to the nice office downtown. They had me at the dungeon with the boys, right? I mean, I must have had at least three lung infections because the weed smoke came up through the vents.
I can only imagine.
But like, so I had lived in that space, like literally before Ludacris was Ludacris, he was Chris Lover Lover. And he had to be nice to me to get into the studio because I was the gatekeeper. Like, you know, and so I had lived this space of like seeing this thing, this entourage of guys and the love and support. And then there's, you know, the management, and it was crazy. And I was traveling with, you know, with Rico, and, you know, I was like running around behind him, like, we got to get to, you know, we got to get to LA, and you got to turn in the score, and they need this music for this. And then, you know, making the first big, you know, Goody Mob record, and, you know, what's next with Outkast, and, you know, working with En Vogue and all of those things. So, and it was all guys in this space. So then when Entourage came, I'm like, that's y'all, you know, we could just carve out a few of y'all, and this is the show. So I was just indulged in it because of that. And because I had lived in the space of working in the industry, that in that show just had like a lot of real, you know, even though they were navigating their way through Hollywood, it just had so much context. And not that everything that I watch has to be relatable to my life, but
sure,
honestly, that's what story does. And the beauty of that show was the universal story of groups that come up. And then if you know athletes, they got Entourage too. Mm-hmm. So it's how it works. You know, people come and they want their crew with them. So I love that show. And there's always some crazy manager, you know, like Ari, that's just over the top, has no idea what world these people come from, but is selling them like a, you know, good old car.
Yeah.
I love that. That a big reason that you love the show is because you want to see, like, you feel kind of a comfort in seeing this world again because you were in that world, mm-hmm. versus like the complete opposite of just like, oh my god, I've been through that. Like, no, I'm never watching Entourage. Like that hits too close to home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
I like
mm-hmm.
that you like embrace the home of it.
Yeah,
and Adrian Grenier is just like really nice to look at.
Yeah, well that leads me to my next question. Do you have a favorite character, Tracy, on the show? Because I mean, like, honestly, everyone feels like they kind of like connect with one. Like, I connected with E. He was uh-huh. he felt like, you know,
I could say that, Dan.
The not famous one, but like kind of like producing things, keeping shit together, wrangling talent. I kind of mm-hmm. connected with E a little bit. What about you guys?
I think I connected with Ari.
That's what I was gonna say too.
I was kind of him. Like, can we make a deal?
Yeah. Like, how are we going to make this happen?
Wow. Golf on a Wednesday, huh, Ari? In the next life, I want to come back as you.
Wish I could return the compliment, E, but I'd rather come back as one of Michael Vick's dogs.
Awesome. So how is this golf game going to get Vince in this movie anyways, just so I'm clear?
Alan is a degenerate gambler. I am going to let him win, and then when he feels cocky, I'm going to seize the moment.
So you're
going to
bet Vince into the movie?
Yep.
Oh, I'm feeling real confident now, Ari.
Your physical appearance has left you no reason to ever feel confident.
Good luck, Ari.
Suck it, E.
Now, I could relate to that character because it was like, I'm not a part of this world, but damn it, I see the value and I want to make it work. So let's go, you know?
I love it. Gosh, I'm just picturing the show with you in the Ari role, and I feel like it's even better. Yeah.
A whole reboot. Hello. Yeah. Let's do it, Dan. I'm ready.
Oh, man. All right, Tracy, great favorite picks, being Bobby Brown and Entourage. A lot of thematic connections there, a lot of nostalgia factor for you, which we love. But your forever shows, what are you watching on a loop? Again, no skipping episodes, no skipping seasons. So it's a pilot to finale rewatch over and over again. But you can jump in between the two shows if you'd like. You can do a couple episodes of one and then jump to the other. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that said, what's your first forever pick?
The Wire.
Ooh, nice.
Wow.
Brady, this is our first Wire.
This is our first
pick.
Wire.
It was in a couple almost, yeah. But I think this is our first criteria pick. I love this pick in forever. Tell us about The Wire. I think most people listening to a TV podcast know about The Wire, but why is it in your forever category?
It felt so real. I think, you know, The Wire was, they had one show called The Corner, and then they had The Wire, sort of set in the same area, I think in Baltimore. Hmm. And it was exploring the crack epidemic and just drugs. I kind of like gangster shows for some reason. You know, I like
a lot of people. I mean, there's tons of them. A lot of people do, you know.
And it was just like, you know what I liked about it? It's like each season they picked a different POV. Mm-hmm. So it was like from the drug dealers, or, you know, point of view, from the cops, from the union, the media. It actually probably was one of the most influential things that I watched as a producer that made me say, I'm going to be a great television producer. And I'm going to tell stories with all the layers. And this is what, and this is what that means. Like, I watch that a lot, just sometimes just to be inspired or to really dial in on what POV I'm choosing when I'm doing stuff, because it was just so good. And the characters were just so great and dynamic, and you rooted for the bad guys and the cops and the crackheads, and you felt, and you justified the kid whose mom was on drugs and he ended up becoming this gangster and had to kill someone. You know, you empathized with so many, the union guys on the waterfront. Like, you empathized because everyone was human. Mm-hmm. And their choices was based on their circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this world. And it's like one little section of this place, you know? And it's just, it shows you how small a world can be for people, and but how many things that are affected by it and how many things are controlling it at the same time. And I just loved it. I thought it was like great storytelling, great acting. I just thought it was good. I mean, Idris, I actually didn't like Idris' character as much.
You know, like Stringer Bell?
Yeah, Stringer was kind of soft. And he wanted to be like, I don't know, he wanted to be corporate and not corporate. You know, he wanted to be corporate, but he didn't have what it took to be on them streets. And Wood is a good friend. We actually share a best friend. And so I definitely just was happy for him. Like, when I watched that show, I was happy for Wood to get that role because we were connected, you know, in that way. So from an industry perspective, I was excited about that show because of the jobs and the people that were really, whose careers were launched there. Mm-hmm. But then just from a storytelling perspective, it really like sort of gave you a glimpse into a space that I felt like people didn't really pay attention to or knew that existed. And it was just different, you know, it was just different. And no one's been able to do that again.
It was so real, but it also was like, I mean, you were on the edge of your seat and entertained the whole time. And the characters are unforgettable.
Yeah.
It's like Avon Barksdale, you know, Omar
Little, I think about all the time. Omar, I think about Omar all the time. I really do. Like, that character, like, Tracy, when you're talking about like these human stories and human characters, like, that's one that really stands out for me. Like, that's such a singular character that I don't, you can't really compare to much else in the genre, you know?
And, you know, if you have any like compassion or empathy for people, that was the thing that like you could dial in that with that show. I love that. I mean, that show, like, no, The Chi, none of these shows are able to do that the way they did that. That was just some smart, just really smart television.
It really was. And I think it's a good forever pick because there are tons of layers. And that's something that you've mentioned a lot in the shows that you've described and the shows that you've developed, is that concept of layered storytelling. And not just layered characters, and characters have different sides, but where do those characters fit into the story and the personal story, and how that lines up to the institutional story, and how those things kind of come at each other. And I think that's a big reason why The Wire is on so many people's is so high on so many people's list, because there's just so much to it. And I think on a rewatch, you know, even if it's for the rest of time, you're still like, rewatch number 76, you're still gonna pick up things. Which I think is cool.
And it's a show that you introduce to people, and then you watch it back with, it's like, oh, you haven't seen The Wire yet? We'll watch it together.
Do you
have a favorite season? Because you mentioned each season took a different perspective. Do you have a favorite season that sticks out?
You know what, I actually liked the last season, because I just like the way the stories were wrapping up. And so I love that season, and then Michael becoming a man, you know, it was like his, because we really saw his coming of age story. Like, they, that show did it come inside of a show mm-hmm. about so many complex things. There was this mm-hmm. coming of age story. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want it to end, but I liked the final season because I liked the evolution of the people and where they landed in that space and in that way. Mm-hmm. So I like that definitely.
And it felt like a time. I still remember watching that finale. Mm-hmm. It actually reminded me of, and this might be a bridge too far and just an excuse to mention this show. It reminded me of Friday Night Lights a little bit in that final season though, in those last couple episodes, you could almost mm-hmm. see they were deliberately not mimicking, but calling back to moments in the pilot in that first season. I think The Wire mm-hmm. did that in a really big way, and in a really I said poetic, but also just like it's kind of like a really beautiful way. Like it was, yeah. you know, it could be a very brutal show. It could be very mm-hmm. Shocking. And that, I think that last season, to your point, really drove a lot of that home and felt almost kind of like the final statement, the final argument mm-hmm. for these mm-hmm. these yep. five seasons in a lot of ways.
I agree. Yeah.
And those characters like really embodying, those actors really embodying who they are. Two kind of funny related stories are my husband has run past Marlo Jamie Hector, who plays Marlo. He's run past him in Prospect Park. And every time it's like, oh my God, it's Marlo. He's like a little scared.
Dangerous.
And the other thing is that he's the one that introduced me to like watching The Wire. So I hadn't seen it before, but I did used to watch this show called 90210, the reboot that was on the CW. And Michael was on that, but he was playing a guy named Dixon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
my husband, Nathan, he goes, oh my God, what's Michael doing on this show? Oh, it's so different. He's in this beautiful yeah. house with a white family.
Yes, right? I kind of felt that way too when Michael ended up on the 90210. I was like, he don't live in Beverly Hills. So, yeah,
he doesn't have a white sister.
Exactly.
All right, Tracy, we're down to the final pick. We're down to the last show on the criteria. What are you pairing with The Wire as your second forever show?
Boondocks. Boondocks.
Boondocks. This is.
I know, it's crazy.
This is a first.
I gotta admit, this is a blind spot for me. I really don't know much about the Boondocks. What is it, and why is it in this spot?
So here's the deal. So you know, Boondocks started out as a cartoon, right, in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like a okay, like a cartoon, cartoon,
a comic
yeah.
strip. Okay. Yes. So Aaron McGruder was just doing this comic strip with the two kids, right? Mm-hmm. Two boys and the grandpa. So I knew my show, Being Bobby Brown, was a hit when they actually put it in the comic strip. Like, it's on my wall. And he's like, the kid is like, you seen that new show with Bobby and Whitney? What? They on a reality show? What are they doing? Have they lost their mind?
Wow.
And everyone was like, you made the comic strip. I'm like, what? Who? And they were like, look at this. And then cut to, because, Turner is in Atlanta. And so then they were like, we're about to do this show with this comic strip, Boondocks. And I'm like, oh my God. Honestly, number one, I used to read the comic strip because they were funny. And then they made the show. And I mean, I could just watch it any moment. I'm always watching. It's so funny. And but it's also like current events, like current culture story, you know? I mean, they ousted BET for not paying people on time. And like they do all, there's Uncle Ruckus and they just like, you know, R. Kelly, like they've covered it all. Like there's nothing off limits. If it's a part of culture, they're covering it. And it's funny. And it's just so good. And Regina King is actually the voice of the little boy. And
oh, I didn't know that.
That's Regina King.
Wow.
Yeah. And the granddad is hilarious. And I mean, it's so good. Like you just watch Boondocks all the time. It's just so amazing.
Oh, wow. So I have a question for folks like myself who just don't know it as well as we probably should and haven't checked it out. Mm-hmm. What are some favorite episodes or favorite moments?
Let's see. Oh, the Katrina episode.
Okay.
So the cousins came because they, you know, got flooded out in Katrina. And for some reason, and this is really true, that everybody was carrying their sofa and they had moved into the house and they were like, you know, they're, and basically to them, because they came from New Orleans and got flooded out of Katrina. These people were rich. They were like, y'all got more than a nigga need. Like, and then they kept saying that they was waiting on their FEMA check. That's like a running joke in my house. They would be like, so when I get my FEMA check. And then the granddad hated them. He was like, y'all got to go.
Bob, I'm in Woodcrest, the very small community with a very big heart. Robert Freeman, a local resident here, has decided to open his home to Katrinian refugees.
Why is the news here?
Well, I called the news and told what you did for us.
What the hell you do that for?
Now, Robert, don't be modest. It's okay.
It's not okay. Now, every damn Katrina victim for 100 miles is going to be coming here. Hello?
Mr. Freeman, what makes a man open his home to complete strangers?
Oh, no. These are not complete strangers. This is family.
Ah, yes, the human family.
Oh, no. This is my actual family. This is my second cousin.
Because we're all cousins and brothers and sisters in the eyes of God?
Well, not exactly. See...
What do you hope to get out of helping these people?
Not a damn thing.
Wow. So selfless.
If you gotta watch the episode, it is hilarious. Like, the younger kid is, like, really, like, you know, he's, like, ghetto and direct or straight. And then the older kid is like, calm down. He's politically correct. And, you know, it's just like, and it's all the pieces of Black family. And it's just like super just intelligent, very, very intelligent comedy.
The way you describe it, it almost sounds like, and forgive me for like comparing it to like this white thing, but it sounds like almost like a Black South Park in the way it kind of dissects current events.
Yes,
and
it
that
is.
Kind of
no,
thing.
It
and
is.
Through the eyes of kids a little bit.
No, it is. Yeah. No, it's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's awesome. Mm. I love that show. I could watch. And if I could watch that in between The Wire, I'm good. I'm gold.
That's a great back and forth. The Boondocks is a big, it's a big hit in my family with my dad and my brother. Like, love it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I like have popped in and out of episodes, but I really want to, like, I need to get in and like really watch it. I just saw that it's on HBO Max. Because every episode that I've seen, I always laugh. I just never like, I never just was watching regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta watch it. It's so good. It's really good TV.
So it sounds like you're very happy with your two forever picks, but we have a bit of a twist.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a twist.
Oh,
what if you could watch one of these forever picks? Okay, every single time that you watch it, it's gonna be like it's the first time you've ever seen it. So it's like after you finish it, memory wiped. You go back, you get to watch it as if you've never seen it before. Mm-hmm. Which one of these shows would you choose to do that with?
The Wire.
That's 100%. Right. That's totally right.
That's the answer.
Yeah, definitely.
You would be so in your, you're just going to all, so basically you're going to live forever just like in your emotions.
Yes. Exactly. For sure. And my honorable mention might be Newsroom.
Get it? Oh. Really? Is it a forever show?
I love that show.
Really? Wow. Tracy, that's a hot take. I'll be honest. And I'm a Aaron Sorkinite.
You're an Aaron Sorkinite.
I love all of his things, and I stand for Newsroom, and I get side eye because of it. That and Studio 60. I like shows about shows. I like Aaron Sorkin writing things about people that produce TV. Not enough seasons though. Not enough episodes to be.
Yeah, not enough episodes. That's why I couldn't make the list. But
how many seasons was that on? Just one or was it two?
Only three. No, it was three. But they were shorter. Okay. HBO season, so they were shorter.
Yeah. Yeah, because remember that episode when he was at that college and they broke down like why this country wasn't great?
Yeah, that was the pilot. That was like the launching off point of his whole journey, which is still a great speech. I'll watch it every once in a while. It's still good. It kind of holds up.
Yeah, that's my husband watches that at least once a month. Like I'll walk in and he's watching it and I'm frozen in that moment. Yeah, I love that show. Like you said, it's like a show about a show, and it was just really, really good. So
yeah, folks like us that make shows, I think that genre of TV is like, I don't care who made it, what it is, I'll always watch a show about a show. Love it.
Yeah, I agree.
But talking about your show, so Tracy, this is top to bottom a really, really excellent list, and so unique to you. I love everything about it. So to recap, Game of Thrones and The Circus are the best shows that Tracy Baker Simmons has ever seen. Being Bobby Brown and Entourage are her favorite shows of all time, and she would watch The Wire and The Boondocks on a loop forever. What a list. I love it. Brandy, of these picks, what's most interesting to you, do you think?
I mean, honestly, all of them were interesting to me. And even though, you know, we've talked about Game of Thrones before, but I feel like your POV on Game of Thrones is very different than anything that I have heard. And I love that. And also, like, being Bobby Brown, like, that's like, just to kind of hear the behind the scenes of that is really amazing, because like, I was a viewer of that show, and like, to see, and it was also at a time when I wasn't making TV yet. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really understand what needs to go into something to like make it good. Mm-hmm. And so like, I really want to like rewatch again and like kind of see like, oh my God, like that was like, yeah, just to hear that, like, you guys just kind of went in, like, you didn't even have their schedule. Like, yeah, you know, like, that's wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love the list. I'm definitely going to get into the Boondocks. Thank you for bringing that back to the surface for me, because that's something that I feel like has been on my list for a while to, like, actually watch. And I'm going to make that happen now. So, Dan, what about you?
To piggyback off the Boondocks, same. I feel like that's been just like a blind. I've known of it. Mm-hmm. I've heard like a random reference here and there, but you know, as a white kid with a lot of, you know, in a lot mm-hmm. of white surroundings, just kind of wasn't in my orbit. And I'm now excited, really excited to check it out. Brandon, you said it's on HBO Max.
It's on HBO Max. Mm-hmm.
Check out the Boondocks on HBO Max. I'll be doing that. And then I also really love The Circus as a best of pick. That show to me, mm-hmm. I think it's very under the radar, underrated. It hasn't mm-hmm. really been nominated for much of anything, but it has this SNL quality where just like the degree of difficulty, if people only knew how hard something like that is. And I think they don't, because it kind of presents news-ish. It feels newsy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, it's just like news. Yeah. They're just, you know, turning things mm-hmm. around like news does, but it's more than that. It is politics, the docuseries. So I love that pick. So Tracy, we have one more thing that before we sign off. I hope we haven't kept you for too long, but we always end the show with three lightning round questions. And this is the total opposite of the criteria. No overthinking it, just kind of the first thing that kind of pops into mind. First question, what's a show that everyone raves about that you've never gotten into?
I would say Westworld. And only just because I just didn't catch it. And then I just was like, okay, I don't want to be binge watch this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I think you probably made the right call there. As someone who's watched all three seasons, it's devolved into some nonsense at this point. That first season was real good, but it's gotten pretty out there.
I don't think I finished the third season. That's when the one Jesse Pinkman was in.
Yeah. And even he couldn't bring it back. It's all over the place. Next question. This is one I really wanted to ask you, Tracy, considering, you know, the line of work that we're in. What's a show that you think about a lot that you wish you created? And you can't say The Circus because we already talked about it.
Oh, can't say that. A show that I think about a lot that I wish I created. Oh, God. You know what? Succession.
Mm. Oh, good one.
Such a good show.
Is real good. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the dynamics. You know, the family. The story, like, it's just, you know, it's a show about the media industry.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like, I like that show. And I wish I made that show. I wish I was telling that story.
Good pick. Last question. What's a recent watch that you've been into that people should check out?
Gangs of London.
Ooh, is that AMC show?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've heard good things about this. This is good. This is like, you know, a different sort of gangster shit, but a gangster, you know, I mean, it's called Gangs of London. It has to be.
Yeah.
What time period does that take? Is that a modern deal or is that a period piece?
It's not a period, but it feels a little period. It feels like it's set probably like the 90s or something like that. Mm. But it has a little bit of secession in it.
Okay.
Which I think is what makes it interesting. And they're like, you know, they're in the drug business, but they're also in the real estate business. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
But that show's good. It's good.
Brandy, what about you? Real quick, before we sign off here, what are a couple of recent things you've checked out that people might want to look into?
Bad Trip on Netflix is one of
the prank movie.
It's a prank movie, but it's really so much more. It's just one of the funniest things that I've seen. It's like, it was laugh out loud, like my stomach kind of hurt from laughing funny. And it was also like really sweet. Like, right. so it's Eric Andre and Laurel Howery, and they are best friends on a quest to get Eric Andre together with like a high school sweetheart misconnection type thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like a road trip movie, and their actors, the girl who plays the love interest is an actress, but everybody else, it's like real people. So it's like a prank movie, and it is just so funny. And you're kind of scared the whole time because it's two black guys traveling through the South, like doing really dumb shit.
Yeah, I gotta check like, that one out.
There's no, I mean, I think they probably had to cut out a few like super racist things that I know had to happen because they went to like a country western bar at one point and there was a whole like vomit scene that was insane. But it is, I mean, it's a little bit gross out comedy, but like it's so funny. And just like, so like Tiffany Haddish is in it too. She plays the sister, and it's really funny. So I definitely recommend that.
Yeah.
So we generally talk about, you know, shows that we're binging or things like that. But I also, mm-hmm. I still keep up on some weekly things. The Amber Ruffin Show. If you're not watching the Amber Ruffin Show, it's on Peacock. It's the best late night show, I think, out there. Amber Ruffin was a writer on Late Night with Seth Meyers. You might know her from her segments, Amber Says What, and Jokes mm-hmm. Seth Can't Tell on that show. She got her own show on Peacock. It's just wonderful. She just, her vibe is just so positive and wonderful. And it just brings me such joy. But then she also like can get to the things that need to be talked about, you know, as, you know, I think the only black woman hosting a late night show right now.
I think so.
She's talking about things in a way that all the others really can't.
Okay.
But she does it in a way that feels accessible for anyone watching the show, and you know when she's serious, you know when it's heartfelt, you know when she's dealing with things personally, but she's still able to connect it to this kind of overall tone that she's created in a really, really great way. Mm-hmm. So I recommend that. That's week to week. I think it just got picked up for a bunch more episodes, but okay. But yeah.
All right, well, with that, guys, it's a wrap on this episode of TV BFFs. So thank you so, so much to our guest, Tracy Baker Simmons. Tracy.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we find you?
Yeah. What are you up to?
T. Baker Simmons on everything. Twitter and Instagram and TikTok.
Okay.
And I'm in the Clubhouse. So it's Tracy Baker Simmons. And I have a club in the Clubhouse called Reality TV Decoded.
Oh.
So yeah, and I have my own website, tracybakersimmons.com. So
all right. Well, everybody, please rate, review, and subscribe, and check us out on Instagram at TVBFFpodcast, or you can email us at tvbffpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please reach out. We definitely want to hear from you all. And send us your six. We want to know what are your top six shows of all time and where they fall on your own personal BFF criteria. So send us an email, leave us a review, drop it there, send us your picks. We'll share our favorites on the podcast. And until next time, goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.